Okay, the idea is to stay informal anyway. And the idea of this discussion is about making the current status of what we know of the low mass planet population that is starting to pop up since a few years. And I will mainly show things, results we got from the HARPS survey, because that's the data we have in hand. But there are other results also. This is just the mass of the planet in function of time to show that since the first 51 peg here, there was this one, but it was a bit big at the beginning. But now there are many big ones, though. But the interesting point is to see that time evolution is also decreasing mass evolution. Well, Michel Mayor was also in the paper.
Oh, no.
The same mafia, okay. And so we are going down very low, to very low masses, and a benchmark is around 2004 here, corresponding to the beginning of the HARPS survey, but also you see that there are yellow dots, that's the other one. The red ones are the HARPS one, and the other ones are yellow. And there are a bunch of new ones here, because it's 3 months old and it's already outdated, or 4 months old. But the interesting point is that we are finding now these low mass planets here.
Have all these been published?
Hmm?
Are all these published?
Only the published one. I will come back with the unpublished one later.
The date is the publication date here?
Yeah, that's the publication date. Yeah. We talked this morning about the mass distribution of this population, and here is just the M2 Sinai, and we see that it's very smooth, very far away, and as the number is getting large, we can start to deconvolve from the Sinai effect in a statistical way, and you get the blue distribution. So we go back to what we mentioned this morning. There is nothing special at certain Jupiter masses, what we agree. But what I think is really interesting is, are we seeing the tail of the binaries coming from the right side? And I'm not convinced of that. So I think that...
One thing, of course this is being taped. To remind people.
No, don't say anything.
Well, no, it's okay. Good things are fine. Just as long as you can stand the heat. We also want to have these talks on our wiki put there by ourselves. Okay, so if you could provide the electronic copies, either PDF or whatever.
Yeah.
Anything you don't
hiding some part of them, and that's fine.
If there's anything you don't want to include, just get rid of it.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
But if you put your talk up there, just don't. But please contact Emily.
Emily, okay.
After the talk, both of you, to provide whatever you want to have. And then she will put it up.
I don't think it's Emily. I think it's Debbie.
No, they do that sort of thing. But we want to make sure that we do this.
And I think he wants to have a record on our wiki.
Okay, anyway.
Because the wiki does have a pointer to what the talks that they put on their website. That's the normal way. But they're not here right now. I want to make sure that goes on to our wiki fast. So that could be a different place. And then eventually it will migrate to their general site.
Okay.
So that's Martin. Those 2 points on the left, why are the blue points below? I would thought they would be all above.
Which point?
Your first two bins, you measure the black points are M Sinai, right?
Yeah, no, that's the red. We use a kernel type of smoothing thing, adaptive smoothing thing. So it's a curve.
And it's
just a bit smooth.
So the measured things are
yes.
The red.
Yes.
What's the black?
Oh, that's the original probably histogram, and then you apply a smoothing function that is adapting depending on the density. It's a non-parametric density estimate. It's just to get a function rather than an histogram.
Is there a selection bias put in there in doing this calculation?
Well, selection bias is here. Oh, what do you mean? On the target or?
M. You have to include a selection bias if you're doing it statistically.
What selection bias?
Where you
It's just, we suppose that all inclination as are
equal. In the mass, you're inclined because they seem to be larger.
But it's not much. I'm just asking.
I mean, of course, it's not much difference, but I'm just wondering if that type of.
For me, it's only in the Sinai.
The naive interpretation of that is Sinai is always less than one, so shouldn't the blue curve always lie above the red?
But it's a number.
That was my naive question. Yeah.
But it's the number.
If you do something more statistical.
No, the real mass is always a bit higher. So
But that's not.
Yeah, well, but it's normalized. Because the total number is the same. So the surface should be the same.
A certain number of these.
Okay.
My point was merely there is a selection bias. It may be small.
No, the only hypothesis is that all inclination are equipoint.
Right, so that's it. There is a slight selection bias because the signal is larger and you get up to the edge.
Yes. Only if, well, okay, but it's so small because you need a Sinai that is so small to not detect the planet. Okay, forget about it. Now, if we enlarge this part here, that's very nice because those are more difficult to find, but they are.
The power?
We don't care. I don't know.
Negative 1 or something.
I think Jeff Marcy had estimate -1 point something. Huh?
We've done this too. This is your latest compilation.
I'm not sure that all known planets are here. And this is just the enlargement of this part here to show that at that point we are starting to get biased. And the question is it really empty? How strong is the bias? And to probe this part here, we had to improve the precision of the observations. This is just a benchmark with some planets at some distances to get the order of the amplitude of the rate of velocity variation. And typical surveys have a few meter per second precision, meaning that they are mainly finding these giant planets. And if you want to go to the Neptune or super Earth, even for the close in one, you need to be better than 1 meter per second, basically.
We'll have some time to learn during the next 4 months, maybe the next month, maybe today. whether getting down to 10 centimeters a second is possible given the...
Yeah, so we will have to set up a dedicated session on that. We did, there are three sources of limitation. It's photon noise, it's stability of the instrument, and it's stellar intrinsic noise. And we have to discuss each of them and how to beat them. Yeah, we think that if, and that's a big if, and maybe Kepler results will help understand that, if there is no stellar noise with low frequencies, causing variation over months or years, or maybe not years, but let's say months, then if you gather enough observation with a good sampling, then you just use statistics to beat down the effect, and we can go below 10 centimeters per second.
So even
taking into account granulation on the stellar surface and spots. And we did the realistic spot effect simulation using what we know on the sun and corresponding to activity levels, different activity levels. I can show that to you.
Depend on the power spectrum of the activity of the surface.
Exactly. So far,
the red part is the crucial part.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by red?
Red, low
frequency. Yeah. Yeah, but it's unknown. Because we cannot. Okay, so we should have a special session on that. Because that's a lot of discussion going on that topic.
I really invite Jeff to sit on the other side of the table, because I know what he'll say.
please think of organizing that session.
Yes.
Just help it.
Yeah, we will do something about detecting Earth type planet. It's space frontier, space astrometry, and radial velocities. Okay. And so to go down below 1 meter per second, that's why HARPS has been developed. I show that just to emphasize that the technique is different than the iodine cell one. We use two fibers, one on the star, one on a lamp that is very stable, not varying, and that you are using to do the wavelength calibration over the time, and also to follow the drift of the spectrograph during the night due to change in temperature and pressure in the spectrograph. That's also why the spectrograph is in vacuum. And that was a really good move to put that in vacuum because nothing is moving, and that's the basic point for the long-term stability. So if we just try to see, illustrate the effect, the red points are Corelli points at 5 meters per second. Those are Euclid's points at 80, I think the blue ones. And the green one are the Harps one. So you see the effect of a 2 Jupiter mass. And this is a zoom that shows the effect of a 10 Earth mass planet. So that gives you the scale. And that's what you need if you want to go from those planets to something we don't really know what they are made of yet, but that in between Earth and Jupiter. So using this instrument, we have been using 250 nights over 6 years, per year over 6 years, no, 250 nights to look at a sample of a few hundred stars. We started with a larger sample, but then we want to avoid
a dedicated telescope.
No. There are 369 on that telescope per year. Actually, the GTO, that was half of the GTO time. The GTO is over, and we got the same amount of night for the next 4 years to complete the program. So it's still going on. And the idea is to select the stars that are the most suitable to find those small variations, because stellar noise can be really a pain when doing the observation. So we selected the sample on the activity indicator, on the rotation, and so on. And we end up with something like 280 stars that are good targets. And, well, yeah, that's the kind of observation we get. So we see right away error bars are about the size of the points. That's just photon noise. So it's not including a stellar effect, for example. And there is no very nice variation. In some cases like this one, we see that there are obvious structure, minimum at different places. Actually, this is a 3-to-2 resonance system with half Saturn and masses of, at the level of half Saturn. It has been published by Correa et al. Last year. This one is the first one we announced, is this 3-Neptune system. When everything is phased, it looks very nice. And as the orbits are not too different from circular, we see that the curve on a chunk of time is not that bad. We have been observing the systems over almost a 6 year, and everything is very stable, and we confirmed it easily. Another more difficult one with masses below 10 Earth masses that was announced in Nantes last year. Over 5 years, we have 135 observations, a bit more now, and the residuals around the solution using just the road radial velocities we have is 85 centimeters per second. So that's the typical precision we can get. And we see here that the curve can be a bit more tricky. And it shows how difficult it can be, because all those systems tend to be in multi-planet systems. The amplitude is small, and you even can add some stellar effect you do not anticipate at some point. And
sort of fits. I mean, you include the planet interaction.
We talked about that the other day. We first just look at the sum of Keplerian because it's quick. Because when the periods are close, you cannot just remove one of the effect and look in the residual for the other. You have to find the solution in a global way. So we are using a genetic algorithm, Monte Carlo chain, Markov chains, that kind of approach. And so we do that with the sum of Keplerian because it's quick. And then when we have the solution, we turn on the planet-planet interaction. And most of the time, it's very small. It doesn't change anything.
Now, when you turn it on, of course, it depends on whether they're all coplanar.
Well, we suppose we have no access to the inclination in this data. Right. So we just suppose that they are coplanar. Yeah.
Stefan, you have a drift of 0.5 meters per second per year. Do you interpret that as an exterior Jupiter or what?
Well, that's something that is pushing us just to look at AO image. images to see if we see something, and we are following the system we don't know. At this point, it's still compatible with many things. Well, what we do in a very general way for all our candidates, when there is a drift, we do an AO observation, because it cuts all the massive long period planet. And then you can do Monte Carlo simulation to estimate the probability of each mass period couple in this. That's what we can do at this point.
How many do you now have in this sort of mass range, say below 20 Earth?
That will come. Okay, when you decrease the mass of the primary, you can go down in mass of the planet with the same precision. But you see that it's kind of getting difficult when the planet is further out or the mass is small. And the point I would like to make here is that don't rely too much on the orbital element you derive from that, especially eccentricity. We see that it's very difficult to constrain the eccentricity. What we get from our measurements is an estimate of the mass or minimum mass and the separation, because the period is kind of a robust parameter we have. But don't trust too much about the eccentricity and all the other effects, except if you can do the dynamical analysis of the system or can get further for the system. But for those low mass planets, it's really difficult. Another difficulty is when the star is active.
A brief question?
Yes?
Two slides ago, I'm just confused about the drift of half a meter per second per year. Is that easily distinguishable from
no drift?
Or just from the motion of the star relative to the sun? I guess you're seeing an acceleration. So this is a dumb question.
What do you mean by the?
I think it was just a dumb question.
It's not dumb. Actually, I saw in Korea's paper on JJ876. This star is so nearby, and its proper motion is so.
Yeah. We call it
half a meter per second.
Yes, that's what we call the secular acceleration. Yeah, that's corrected. That's a proper motion effect. Yeah. Like, now that's taken out.
It's like neutron stars and globular clusters.
Oh yeah.
So in other words, do you in some cases fit for proper motion or not in your model?
No. We fix the proper motion and we estimate the acceleration. And
it's not the right word here. In the ephemeris that you.
Yes, we set an ephemeris, and so all the velocities are relative to the choice of the correction you apply for the acceleration.
You don't include proper motion in.
No. We just estimate the effect. I wanted to say something, I forgot why. And that's other cases where it's difficult when the star is a bit active. So that's the effect of solar spots. So you see that there is a spread. The signal is still significant, but again, the parameters are much more difficult to get. And same here, in that case, it was a star that we are following at a lower precision, at the level of 2 or 3 meters per second. That's for statistical purpose. But when there is a giant planet, you get excited by the candidate, you take more observations, and then you see something else. And so here, except for the period, and maybe the amplitude is not too bad, then it's very difficult to get good parameters.
So what fraction of your stars are like?
It's coming.
Okay, thank you.
So in this separation versus mass diagram, with this radial velocity detection, we are filling up this area of the diagram. Very interestingly, further out, the microlensing technique is also finding those low mass planets, but much further out, and also around M dwarfs. But it shows anyway that at all separation, we expect this. And that's where we were looking at the results of planet formation model, the population synthesis model that Daglin is doing with Shigeru Ida, and also the Burn group around Willy Benz. And as Doug will only come next week, I can show some results from the Burn group. But if we come back to the, I forgot to mention, if we come back to the distribution of mass, here we have this small amount of planet detected. That's the low mass, the new low mass planets. And those are really difficult to detect in comparison to those here at larger masses. So the guess is that this is real, and then there could be another distribution here.
Really?
Have you tried to do an analytical estimate of your bias? I mean,
The program is not covered well enough to do the statistical analysis. We are just waiting to have kind of an homogeneous set.
To do that.
That's the plan, of course. So this is the Bern models. They start with seeds at different place in the disk, and the seeds have masses of have a mass of 0.5 Earth masses, and the idea is just to model the growth of giant planets. And in many cases, the seeds do not grow because they start late, for example, in the disk. The idea is to start from realistic initial conditions in terms of disk mass distribution, metallicity of the nebula, and so on, and they do it in a Monte Carlo way. I think Doug is doing the same as the Bern group. And they have some parameters they can twist a little bit in the model, of course, like the type 1 migration. They had to decrease by a factor 100 or 1,000 from the standard value, or all the points would just fall into the star. And so the way you populate some part of the diagram will very much depend on those parameters. And the observation of real planets at those places will be fundamental, from radial velocities, but also from the transit space missions.
What people are having to crank down migration so much, and we were touching on that earlier, is because people tend to evolve these, or tend to run these models with a disk that's too massive. If you
take the disk is evolving. They take into account disk evolution here. And that's one of the main reasons for the stop of the planet here.
So even if you have the planets growing relatively late, if you have planets that don't even grow very big in the early parts of the disk, I mean, at some point there's a point where the disk mass is low enough that you just don't have a lot of migration, and that's when you don't have to do so much.
Yeah, but they start with very small seeds, 0.5 Earth mass. So at that point, they just run like crazy.
It's a subject for further discussion.
Doug, we can talk about it.
Yeah. Some expertise in the group. The number of people skeptical about these models for various reasons.
Okay, I am also skeptical about those results because they are only growing one planet per star, for example. It's not multi-planet. That's 1D model. There are many things, but that's the only way. That's the only result we have that we can compare to the observations at this point.
Why aren't these planets at the lower end of the mass range?
Those here? I'm not understanding the question.
This is not a temporal evolution, I think.
It is.
Sure, it is. Okay, sorry.
No, it is. But you start to put your seeds where they can form in the disk, where you have enough material, and okay, taking into account the time scale to form.
Kind of grow, and they just leave them there.
Grow occasionally, if you look one or two.
Yeah, exactly. They're not growing. I just would have thought they would have migrated.
But the point is, Taiwan migration. The point is, you shut down Taiwan migration. Oh, okay. So there are a number of interesting issues.
Yeah. So I don't know enough about that. The point I would like to make is that they are kind of trying to reproduce a population of planet. They do many.
But before you leave that, I just. The point that I think is useful is that in the context of the whole migration, this is obvious, but in the context of the whole migration scenario, you start out at larger distances and you populate the smaller distances for the giant planets.
Yes, because you cannot migrate without growing.
In types of simulations, it's possible from the current observations, which are all fairly close in, to infer a hidden population at much larger separations that people are starting to see.
Okay, that was the next slide.
Many years ago was that it's not 5% of all stars that have these things. Yeah. It's not 10-20% of all stars with large metallicity. It might be about 50%, because you're not seeing those at large separations that because of the large
planets,
etc. And so there's so many shoes that are going to be dropping, but that's another shoe to drop as you push it to longer and longer periods.
Okay, so what they do now is for each realization, they compare to, they apply filters to the population, so what they get at the end correspond to what we observe in terms of accessibility of the space parameter space. So that's here. That's the population, and that's what we should be able to see. And the blue dots are the actual observations. At some point, it's not updated. The point to note here is that they only considered systems with one giant planet to do that, because they were building up one planet per system, and only the giant planets were considered. And they, when they were able to reproduce the metallicity distribution, mass distribution, blah, blah, then they say, okay, that one could be a true population. And if we look in the area where Hobbes can find planets, we see that there are many of them. So there was a hint from the published low-mass planets that there is a new population of low-mass planet, and this population is kind of predicted by the model, the crude model we have. And so that's now leading us to your question. How many of those planets do we have in our HARPS data? Maybe just before that, one point to note is that the number of stars that are followed to detect those low-mass planets is much smaller than the number of stars that is followed and giving the detection of the giant planets. It's about a factor of 5, roughly, 5 to 10. And if you normalize the distribution, that's the known giant planet, and that's the distribution of these low-mass planets. And if you compare that to the prediction of the models, you have the giant planets, and you have here the super-Earths. So they match. And again, this model were only calibrated using the giant planet. They are predicting this, and we are finding them.
The ratio doesn't match.
Well, then we have not worked out the numbers yet, and there are many tuning parameters. But another thing that is very interesting is that they are predicting lots of even lower mass planets, even not taking into account the formation of terrestrial planet after the disappearance of the disk, just as failed giant planets. And this is a very strong push for all the programs looking for Earth-type planets.
So the prediction, they are failed cores. So
yes, this is only failed cores.
From like terrestrial.
Well, yes. What is hidden there is that they put seeds already, and the way they decide if they can put the seed or not might be important, but they take very much care of putting them where it's possible to have them. But there's more work to do, of course. And now if we look in our data, we have many of those. Well, a few are published now, but not all. And if we work up the statistics.
Can you go back?
Yeah, no, 5 seconds.
So out of the 280 good targets, there are 117 that do not have enough observation yet. And for the remaining 163 stars, they can be divided in categories. We have a planet, we have the orbit, we are writing the paper, or we are waiting for the longer period in the system to be covered.
Which is the referee report.
That's one of the difficulties. You never have only one planet, or rarely have one planet. So you have a very short period, 5 days, you get right away. But then you have the effect of the second one, that is kind of destroying your orbit. So you need to cover the second period to get your system characterization, and then you have a third one. And it takes a long time and many observations. It's why it's so difficult to get the results out very quickly. And there are the cases where it's not varying, or the star, there is some variation, but very likely it's due to the star. We have diagnostics for activity and so on. And that's the number. It means that if you are pessimistic, you have 40% of the stars that have those low mass planets. If you're optimistic, you even can count that and you go up to 58 or 60%. And that's the statistic we have now. And I put the limit at 50 Earth masses for those, because we had some cases between 30 and 50. It's results in progress. So
above a few Earth masses.
The smallest we have, that's only, well, I should have said that, that's only for solar type stars. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the M dwarfs. That's another program for which we also have So the idea now is to look at the properties of this population, even using the non-published one with preliminary orbit. Some will change in time, but qualitatively it will not change. At least it stayed the same over the last 18 months. And the first distribution to look at is this mass distribution. So are we seeing that? Basically, the answer is yes, because we have many observations, and this is the distribution. So the distribution is rising here. So we are seeing this distribution going up. Then at 10 Hertz masses, and it answers a little bit your question, we are starting to be biased. Because at a few days, 4 to 5 Earth mass planet gives a signal of between 2 and 5 meters per second. So it's getting difficult. And again, if we compare to the model I showed before, we are here. So we see that. I don't believe this bump here, but the idea is just to see that it's going up. That's one of the parameters. The other one is the period distribution. If we go back to old histogram of the period distribution for giant planet, well, it was rising but in log scale or flat in separation, in linear scale, I think. But the idea, the important point was to see this bump around 3 days here. That was interpreted as the sign of the stopping mechanism of the migration. So this was the reason why we believed that there was migration in the disk. And if we look at the low mass planet distribution, so you have just to look at the scale here is 0.5, where you have this peak, and here you have almost nothing. So it's just raising up. So there is no sign of stopping mechanism for the low mass planet. So if it's just the disk that is disappearing, why do we have this? I don't know. So that's the kind of constraint that you should take into account.
A low mass object to be more subject to what a disk would do. It would force it in. And the large mass object would be harder to push.
Yeah, and they stay there. Maybe. That's for the two parameter for which we can say something that is
kind of... Maybe the system is a planet raising your tide on the star, or not much.
Well, for this tidal spiraling, the larger the planet, the faster the effect.
Yeah, that's
a good point. Then we can look at the star property and still this multiplicity effect. Well, that was for M stars. For the solar type stars, we have between 70 and 80% of the detected candidates that are in multi-planet systems. So it seems to be really the rule.
Detected planets below 50 Earth masses.
Yes, at least one below 50. So most of them. We only have one or two cases with a single planet.
And how does that compare for giant planets?
It's 25%, but the longer the survey, the higher the rate. So it just means for me that probably you have to put them further and further out, and it takes a long time to find them. But multi-planet system formation is probably the rule in general.
Are you saying, I'm not observing this all, are you saying that there's some preference for M-star planets around M-stars or not? Or
well,
does it not address that?
No. This is just to say that around M-stars, the fraction of multi-planet system is high. It's even higher here, but maybe it's more difficult to find them here. And what is for sure, maybe there are less planets around M stars because the disk is smaller, but there are more small mass planets than large mass planets around M stars.
Okay.
But it doesn't show up here. I will come back on the effect of.
Half of them are multi-planet systems around M stars, but around G and K it's more like 70.
Yeah, for the small mass planets.
Yeah, okay.
And then we can look at the property of the primary star. That's the metallicity effect that probably you all know. So you have more giant planets around metal-rich stars. And now if we look at the result for the low-mass planets, here is again for the giant planet star. Here is the sample in our Corally volume-limited sample of star with planet, and the comparison sample analyzed in the same way, and the difference was obvious. And the two arrows here are reported at the same position because the scale is a bit different. And the blue histogram is for planet with masses below 20 Earth masses, and the red one for planet below 10 Earth masses. And what we see is that it seems that for lower and lower mass planet, you don't need to have this metal enrichment. But this is not statistically significant, it's just a trend. It looks like. That's the thing we have to have a better look to.
I don't know if I want to say what I'm thinking. It might be a good paper. Maybe I shouldn't. Sorry.
But there are many ideas. And the other property of the primary star is, of course, the mass. And if you look at the mass in planetary system in function of the mass of the primary star, you get this histogram here. You have basically three bins, that's stars between 2 and 5 or 6 solar masses. That's basically results for giant stars, solar type stars, and M dwarfs. And you normalize by the number of stars in each bin, and you pile up all the mass of all the planets that have been detected. So it's the mass of planetary material per unit of primary star. And it's obvious that, of course, you can build much bigger planet around more massive stars. And it goes back to the remark on the M dwarfs. And if here we are missing all the small mass planets because they are very difficult to detect around giant stars, but we don't care. It will just change a little bit here. If we are missing many giant planets around M dwarfs, then it can change a bit here.
We would have thought that ahead of time, but these are data that show it.
Yes. And that was done by our group and also by John Johnson that did about the same with his sample of subgiant stars. And this is just a summary of the properties, the differences between the giant planet, and that's what I just discussed. So I let it in for the record. And that was for the radial velocity. We talked a little bit in some length this morning about the radius and the results of transits. Of course, in this mass radius diagram, you have all these giant planets showing this huge diversity with the pop-up planets and so on. And in the super-Earth regime, we have two candidates with about the same mass, although there are some uncertainties on the mass, but show that radii are quite different, showing the diversity also here. And this is really important because if we have a huge diversity here, we will not be able to rely on a theoretical mass radius relation. And that's the future. And that's why we are.
Rely on a single.
Not on a single one, yes.
But you expect that because
the. Yeah. Of course, after the data, when you have calibrated all the models, then it will be fine. And for the next discussion, we'll talk about the detection of first star planet in the habitable zone. Because we can push all what I said with radial velocity down to the precision needed to detect those planets.
Thank you. More questions? Thoughts?
So for detecting low mass thing, I understand you're trying to focus on small, you know, clean stars.
Yes.
But there was mentioned this morning about this, magnetic effect. So are there efforts trying to look at the losing velocity for those massive, messier stars, magnetic active stars?
Well, those ones are the young one, high rotation, high activity.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
If you have spots on the star surface, you can have effects that are 10 times larger, even more than the effect of the planet. So then you are dead.
Oh, we just care about Jupiter, for example. We don't care about the low mass planets.
Well, there are historical, in quote, example of a star that was to be announced with a 4-day planet, and then the photometry was varying with the same period, and now 10 years later, even more, it's still has the same type of variation, meaning that the spots were very stable on the star, and so you have to be very careful. So you have to develop in the same time as your observation diagnostics, sure, showing that this is due to the star and not to the planet. And there are many works now targeting young stars, because that's also very interesting. And the two cases I know, TW Hydra and another paper that came out 1 month ago in AstroPH claiming the detection of a planet around a very young star, they both are due to other phenomena and not to planet. And probably going to the infrared and being less sensitive to the temperature difference between the spot and the photosphere of the star will help. So, but that certainly is something people are looking into, and that will bring new results.
A little bit along the same lines, the way you select your stars, just having them have long design eyes and being generally quiet makes a lot of sense. That's the way to get high radiosity precision. But then, if you have long design eyes, then statistically you are favoring stars that are more pole on, right? And if you do that in a general Copeland,
if your detection limit is right in the middle of what you are getting, mm-hmm, if you are much better than that, you should also get the stars that are inclined in the unfavorable way. You will just be missing the very low fraction that is really...
That's just what I'm asking, how significant that effect is, because if it is, then you statistically underestimate the masses of planets.
Yeah, but that's true for all the samples, for all the survey. We have the same bias.
And the transits would not have that problem.
Yes, so comparison of transit results and radial velocity results for short period planets will be very interesting. And there are already some discrepancies, even with the metallicity of the star. But of course, then the samples are not the same. When you look at the field, you kind of bias your sample. We try to work in volume-limited sample around the sun, to avoid as much as possible bias. The bias we are introducing is about age and activity level, and should not change the statistics of the orbital elements, for example.
All right.
Except if there is an evolution, well, but we don't expect it to be huge, at least as a first guess.
Could you just go back to two comments you were talking about, the effect of stars, which is very important. I just wanted to make a comment that if people care about students, the Michelson Summer School this year, the Sagan Summer School this year will focus not on planets, but on the stars that have planets. So we're recognizing that, you know,
yeah,
it's really important to know,
yeah,
about vibrations, oscillations, and spots, yeah, and trying to figure out what's going on. If you have students that are interested, they should apply.
Yes, I already knew about the school. Yes, this is very important. And also understanding the limitation of each method.
Yes.
Because some are coming from the stars, but there are other sources, and this is really important.
Oh, it's I don't remember, it's July.
July, yeah. Mm-hmm. Beginning of July, I would say, but I'm not sure.
Okay.